So let's move now to test closes and see how this really connects. Again, the test close is probably one of the most important elements you have as a professional persuader. Because what most salespeople do is they ramble through a presentation, they have not put themselves in a peak state, they do not know who they're dealing with, they don't have rapport, and they finally come down the end and they start closing. And the problem is they don't have rapport, so the person doesn't listen to them, they don't know their real needs, they've made a generic presentation, and they wait to the very end to find out there's not a whole lot of interest. What we want to do is we want to be more professional. Test closing provides a whole series of things for you. And again, the key to test closing is understand a test close is an opinion-asking question. A regular close is a decision-making question. Now, an example of that would be, you know, you're coming along and you're talking about something and say, does that make sense? I've test closed you throughout this program, haven't I? I'm doing it now, too. And what I'm constantly doing is stopping and asking for your feedback, saying, what do you think? Does that make sense to you? How does that look to you? What's your feeling about that? Those are all test closes. What they do is they allow you to take a thermometer out and see, where is this buyer right now? Are they freezing? Are they cold? Are they cool? Are they boiling hot? Are they ready to buy? Do you know that most salespeople sell and do presentations they don't even need to? Many times, just by a good test close up front, you might find out. You might say, so are you ready to make an investment in one of these today? And the person says, yes, I am. You say, great, which one do you want? They say, that one. You go, great, let's sign you up. But no, not most salespeople. They go, no, I haven't given the presentation yet. You don't want to get caught in that trap. The ABCs of closing that every great closer in the world knows are these. Always be closing. But I'll tell you a better one. Always be test closing. So you don't ever want to be in a position where you're stuck and what you're doing is trying to get a sale and finding out somebody's not ready to buy. If there's any one thing that I could convince you of or push you to think about, it's this. That you never want to close until the prospect is really ready to buy. You never want to close until they're ready to buy, because the bottom line is, if you try and close them and not ready to buy, now you've got to deal with major objections. I use test closes to find out where the prospect is, and I'm excited about that. See, that way I'm not going to come in and try and get them to make a decision when I know they're not ready to buy. All I'm going to create then is some conflict. So it's a thermometer. It's a chance to see where you are. It's a chance to get commitments from the prospect that the prospect doesn't feel so uptight about. If I say to you, do you want this in brown or blue? That starts to get somebody like they're having to make a decision. You can take a normal close, like do you want it in brown or blue? Do you want to do it on Thursday or Friday? Do you want the executive model or the economy model? Those are all closes. In other words, those are all questions that if I ask them, you've made a decision, you've made a real strong commitment. I could turn them into test closes just by changing the language slightly, by adding the keywords. In your opinion, do you feel like... Keywords. In your opinion, do you feel like? So I could say, in your opinion, do you feel like you'd probably want to go with the brown or the blue? Doesn't that feel like it'd be easier for you to answer than do you want it in brown or blue? Sure enough, it feels like it's a little bit less of a commitment. But what you and I know by studying unconscious tools of persuasion is that if a person makes a small commitments become big commitments. So you need to realize that all you have to do is get them to make a series of commitments to you through test closes. And if they're saying, yeah, I kind of think that would be good. Yeah, I think that would be good. At the end, if they said yes, it's going to be hard for them to turn around and say no. So that's what a test close can really do for you. And so you need to come up with a series of them. And you need to learn to use them so that you know where you are. And you know that you can be test closing all the time. You should be test closing after each step. Test close after you got their interest. Maybe interest is all it takes to get this person to buy. Test close after you know what some of their values are. Say, if we could meet these needs, would that be something you'd really want? Well, yes, of course. You might want to really go to a close right away. So you want to know where people are at any time. Now, what are some types of test closes? Well, there are several. Let's start with three general ones, general categories. First of all, there's the opening test close. An opening test close is where you start out right up front and you immediately find out where the buyer is. In other words, the biggest challenge that most salespeople have is they go in, they do this long presentation, and that person never had an intent to buy, no desire to buy, and they may have made commitments to their husband, wife, boyfriend, or girlfriend where their emotions were on the line if they did buy. In other words, they promised they would not. It'd be good to know where someone is when you start so you have at least a barometer of what their level of desire is. So some examples of opening test closes. How long have you been considering owning a product like this? How long have you been considering owning a Mercedes? Or another one would be, are you seriously considering owning this particular home or buying a car today? Or why are you seriously considering making this investment? So what you'll get out of that question is, one, whether or not they're really serious, and two, you'll get some of their urban, some of the emotional reasons they want to buy, and some of their urban, some of the logical reasons why they want to buy. You'll get both out of this question. This is a superior question, because out of the same question, you're getting more information. Does that make sense? So these are opening test closes, and one of your assignments is going to be to sit down and generate opening test closes that would be elegant. And by the way, if you go, are you seriously considering making investment in a car today? And they go, well, no. Would you like to know that now or the end of your presentation? I don't know about you, but I like to know now. That doesn't mean you can't sell them. It just shows you where their level of desire and want is. And if they have no desire, and they have no desire to really go for it, and they're just looking, the thing that I always encourage you to do is dig for a hurt. That is, desire goes up when someone feels a hurt, meaning something they start noticing they don't have or they're missing out on. Okay? Now, the second kind of test close we call a trade-off test close. What you do in a trade-off test close is you know someone has an objection potentially. You know they have a concern. They have a drab, a dominant reason to avoid buying. And what you do is you contrast the reason for not buying with a benefit that you know they really, really want. In other words, you weigh, okay, here's why you don't want to buy, but here's all the reasons you should buy according to you, and they're more valuable. And you get them to tell you that you're right. And by doing so, they make a commitment, but they haven't said they'll bought. They've bought, yet they have. In other words, they've made another commitment, but it feels comfortable because it's only a test close. And if they've not made a commitment, you know where they are. You know you need to create more conviction. So an example that might be, would it be worth an initial investment of blank in order to earn blank amount of income and appreciation for the next 24 months? So you know that their concern in this case would be the initial investment, whatever it is. So you say, would it be worth blank? And you put it right on the line in order to achieve what you know they want even more. Now, if what they want is even stronger in this weighing process, as you know, what's going to happen is you're going to say, I know you're concerned about blank, but would it be worth blank in order to have this benefit? And if this benefit is strong enough, you have what I call leverage, which is the thing I'm always looking for in the sales presentation. I looked for it when I was qualifying this person. I was looking for what are the things they want most in the world? What are the values that are most important, most compelling to this person? And if I have those emotions, those desires, I now have leverage. I have more than enough to catapult out any fears or any limitations they have, but I should do it probably through a test close. If I say, would it be worth an initial investment of blank in order to have this appreciation? And the person says, no, I want to know that now. I don't want to come down to the end and be doing an order blank close or trying to sign them up and say, look, I'm just not interested in doing it. It's not worth it. I want to know early on. So another purpose of a test close is to get the no's out early. Everyone's going to have no's. You don't want to hide from no's. Hey, get the no's out as soon as you can in the presentation. I'll tell you why. Remember what I told you earlier. When someone says no to you, the law of reciprocation has begun to become induced in your favor. Remember the example we talked about? If your children come to you and say, I want to do this and this, and you go no, and they come again, you go no, and they come again, you go no, there comes a point where you start feeling kind of bad, like you want to say yes, and most people want to say yes if you can meet their real needs. So get the no's out of the way early, and there are simple no's. Well, I don't think it's worth it. It's not no, I won't buy. It's no, I don't think it's worth that investment. See, now you aren't on the line. You're not in a situation where you're going, oh, I've lost the sale. You've got more information now, and you can say, well, I'm sure you've got good reasons for saying that. Do you mind if I ask, why do you say it's not worth it? And now they'll start to tell you their beliefs. And what's your job as a salesperson? To align what you're sharing with that person with their own beliefs. That is to show them how they can get what they really want, change some of their fears, by aligning with their beliefs, saying, I know this and this and this is true for you, and I'm sure it is. And what if we look at it this way? But you don't know what that is unless you first test closed. Another example of a trade-off test close would be, in order to achieve your blank goal, would it be worth the one-time investment of blank? Again, you're contrasting what you know their fear is or their drab with the emotional reasons to buy now that are really compelling. A third one would be, would it be worth 2 weeks of study in order to be able to change anyone's limiting beliefs and enhance their life now and forever? But the bottom line is, you're not getting them to say a question that they could say no to and you've lost the sale. If they say no, you're in luck. That means you get to find out what's going on in the buyer's mind. And that's what you want to know. You don't want to come to the very end and then hope that they've bought. You want to know where they are throughout the entire sales presentation, consistently know exactly where they are mentally and emotionally towards buying. You want to continually measure. A third type of trial close is called a progressive trial or test close. And that is, if I say something like, if you were to go ahead with this, now what I'm doing is I'm getting you to think about making progress. Maybe you're stuck. You go, well, I don't know what I'm going to do here. I just don't know if this is right for me. Now, instead of having you stay stuck, I do a little test close. I say, well, if you were to go ahead with this, when would you want the service to begin if you decided to go ahead with it? Now, what's brilliant about this kind of question is this. Whatever a human being focuses on, that's what they feel and experience. If I ask you, what are you really unhappy about in your life? What's screwed up in your life? And I get you to think long enough, almost all of us could search our brain and find something that could upset us. And you will feel upset, won't you? If I ask you, though, what are you most happy about in your entire life? What's the best thing in your life right now? And I really get you to think and think and think, you'll come up with an answer. And when you think about that, you'll feel incredible. Remember, human beings are what I call deletion creatures. At any moment in time, we're only paying attention to a small little band of what's available to us. Whatever we focus on, though, that's what we feel. It's like a camera lens. A camera lens, if we went into a party with a camera lens, it only sees a part of what's going on. And the only thing you feel is what you see through that lens. Now, if you look at this couple over here, they look unhappy. You might feel a little bored or unhappy yourself. You go to this group of people, and they're excited. Now, by looking and being part of them, you might feel really good. The point is, the questions you ask people determine what they focus on. If you get a person to stop focusing on the question of whether or not they should do something and focus on, well, just for a moment, let's say you were going to do it. If you were going to do it, when would you want to do it? You now have them focused on buying. They start to feel like they're buying, and they forget about the thing they were focusing on quite often, especially if you get them to have some emotion about this new choice. So these are test closes. We're not saying, let's do this now, sign the piece of paper. Will you sign the paper? Or will you sign this paper or that paper? No. You're test closing, but making progress. A second kind would be, if you were to overcome, or if we were to overcome blank challenge, you'd probably want to go ahead with this, wouldn't you? This is another test close. What you're finding out is they're saying, here's the challenge. Rather than handle it, you're saying, well, you know, if we could really handle that, you'd want to go ahead, wouldn't you? You're not saying you absolutely will sign this piece of paper. You're test closing. You're making it feel like an opinion. And they go, well, yeah, I probably would. They've now made a commitment. You know where they are. They go, no, I wouldn't. Or they go, sure, that's all it would take, and then I'd do it. See, when you ask a test close, you should be able to see the state of your buyer and know where are they on this scale. If they go, well, yeah, I guess if we can handle that, I'd go ahead. You can see that their level of interest and desire is not real high. What do you need to do with that person? You need to add some more conviction. Maybe give them some more reasons to buy that motivate them. Maybe what you need to do is create a little more hurt for them. Maybe you need to get them to see some evidence that this really will benefit them even more strongly so they have more conviction. But if they aren't really at a high level when you test close, add more conviction. Please make a note of that. If when you test close, someone is not moving towards buying, they're not in a high level of energy or excitement or desire, what you should immediately do is start adding more conviction. By the way you talk about things, by the units of conviction that you add, and maybe by stirring them up, or by something we call defeats, creating a series of demonstrations and examples that make them feel like there's more value there. Another example would be, does this sound like something you'd like to go ahead with? Again, this is an example where you get to make progress with a person if they say, yeah, I think it probably sounds like it. They don't feel like it's a major commitment. So these are some simple samples of test closes. What we want to do is we want to make sure that we're constantly test closing, that we're not just doing it when we get to this step called conviction, but we're doing it from the first moment we meet them throughout the entire process so we always know where they are. You never want to be afraid of finding out where the customer is. The only thing you want to be afraid of is not knowing where they are, coming to the end of the presentation and trying to close them and have them say no. Then you've got no place to go. Plus, once people say no, now they've made a commitment. They've said no. And if you've changed their mind, there's a part of them that feels like you did something against their will or maybe you manipulated them. How many of you had to deal with that, where you were successful in convincing them, and then later on they had buyer's remorse because they felt like, well, you turned them around? Have you had that experience? So I know I have. So what I've learned to do is find out where they are the whole way and never start to close the prospect until they're absolutely ready to buy. That's absolutely critical. Now, there is one more distinction I can give you in how to create conviction. So what have we talked about? Number one, we've talked about making sure that you have that congruency within yourself every time you get in front of the customer. That you do it through affirmations, you do it by thinking about the value you've given people, but where you are feeling in your gut, not just logically, but in your gut, that you're being a giver and not a taker in this transaction, that you're giving this person much more than you're asking back in time or money or inconvenience out of them to make the project work. Two, we've said you've got to use units of conviction. That what you have to have is take as many facts and features about your product as you can come up with, and develop those into units of conviction, meaning develop those so you can turn that fact into real benefits for the customer. At least two real benefits that you can back up, and where you get the customer to say, yeah, that really is valuable for me, by asking a test close, an opinion-asking question, and boom, you've now put more conviction on the side of them buying. And we've said, three, that in order to do this effectively, you've got to continuously see how you're doing. See where they are throughout the entire sales presentation. And if you get a hot response, if they go, yeah, I think we ought to go ahead, should you wait and say, okay, well, tell me your objections? You know? No, you should just assume the sale. You should immediately go to the close. If at any time you get a hot response, super hot response, to a test close, where you say, well, does this sound like something you'd really like to do? They go, yes. Even if you're just in the rapport stage, go to the close. Now you say, Tony, well, what if they come back and they say they're not ready? Well, then all you'll have to do is you'll recycle the process, and we're going to show you how to do that. Fourth distinction I want to give you here is this. We talked about, in an earlier step, this little acronym called DEFEATS. DEFEATS is a set of words, right, that stand for things that you can do if someone is not convinced. DEFEATS basically destroys disbelief. And DEFEATS, if you recall, the D stands for demonstration. If you're trying to create conviction in someone, you're trying to convince them of something, and you've got this leverage you're trying to develop, and you want to get boulders over here, we live in a society that is very visually oriented. And so what's really important for us to do is, whenever possible, let's demonstrate the quality of our product. Let's demonstrate that it really works. Now, many of us are selling intangibles. It doesn't matter. You can still demonstrate an intangible. You can demonstrate it through other people's opinions. You can demonstrate it by applying a skill right there in front of them. But demonstration is one of the most powerful ways to give someone enough evidence that they can feel certain that by making this decision, they're going to get what they really want. And that's what this whole step is about, creating conviction and testing closing, getting somebody moving in the direction of buying. So most important thing here is to make sure that we do a demonstration. E stands for give them an example. In some cases, you can't do a demonstration, or it's more appropriate to give an example. You know, I worked with Mary Sue the other day, and Mary Sue was pretty much in a very similar situation as you. She wanted to do this and this and this. She made this decision, and you know what? Now she's got the rewards. So you teach them that by making the decision, they'll get the pleasure they want. And you do it by an example. It's got to be a sincere example. It's got to be a real example, so you should collect them. Next one, F. F stands for facts. Now, what's a fact and what's a claim? Good question. Well, a claim can be a fact, but any fact you state that the buyer doesn't believe 100% is a claim. Any claim you make that they believe is a fact. You know, that's a reality. In fact, are there facts that they will tell you that you think are claims against your product? So have you ever had them say, well, your product does this and this and this, and they hold it as a fact, and you hold it as a claim? It's because they believe it's real. So what's fact and what's claim has to do with what people hold is certain, is real, is a fact. So even if you're telling absolute truth about a fact, they may not feel like it's a fact unless they're convinced. So you better make sure if you deliver a fact, you do it congruently. Or you have something to back it up, some kind of social proof, maybe a document or something to show them. Because a lot of people will not buy your idea. Now, they usually will. They'll listen to your facts and they'll believe them if you've done your work up front and you've developed rapport. If they like you and they believe that you're an honest person and you have their interests in mind, you state a fact, they're more than likely going to believe it, aren't they? E stands for exhibit. What's the difference between exhibit and demonstrate? Not a whole lot. The biggest difference, I would say, is when you exhibit something, maybe what you're going to do is you're going to give them evidence through time. I might demonstrate something for you right now. If I'm going to put an exhibit up, I might have something stay there and have you have a chance to be exposed to it, making results in your business through time, maybe for a week or two. The next one for us is A, is we give an analogy. Analogy is you show someone how something is like something else. So you say, John, you know, we're marketing this computer system to you, and I sense that maybe I can give you a better example. Do you know how in your business, when your accounting department did this and this and that, how things really changed? He goes, well, yeah, that's very much like what will happen when this computer system goes in. Because when we do this, just like that, X, Y, and Z will happen. Oh, and now what it becomes is something that's more real for them. It becomes real evidence to buy now. So an analogy is another possibility. T stands for testimonials. And testimonials are phenomenal. If you can have some fabulous letters from people that are considered to be social proof, movers and shakers talking about the quality of your product, obviously you're going to have an impact. If you can get letters from people this person knows, somebody they know personally, that's even more power of social proof. If you can get something like a videotape where a person is actually communicating and it's more real, all the more power for you. And S stands for statistics. And statistics are like facts. They're only as good as your conviction when you talk about them and that you're accurate. And for myself, for example, if I don't talk about something very often and I don't know the statistic, I'll say, to the best of my memory, it's this. It's not exactly that, but it's within that range. So it's best not to just be direct unless you feel really convinced within yourself. Otherwise, it will not have weight as evidence. It can be looked at as something that, well, they're being inaccurate with me. And I was guilty of that quite a bit in the past, and I've tried to really watch myself so that if I start to go into that habit, I catch myself and say, oh, wait, if I don't know exactly, I'll say I don't know exactly. So make sure you use your evidence effectively and appropriately. That's defeats.